Welcome to Outside the Panels. Today we are going to be talking about our next book in the Vault White Noise series. It's the noise that always surrounds us even though we can't hear it. And we're going to be diving into Alex Pachnedel, Martin Simmons, Dean Cuniff, and Taylor Esposito's Friendo. As always, I am Michael, also known as Poet Air. And joining me, as always, is
Chaz, a.k.a. Chaz Simons.
And I'm Blake, and with us today, we've got
Jack Pruitt, a.k.a. Synesthetic.
I love white noise. I mean, I'm obsessed with them. I'm trying to actually collect every single trade of them that is available right now and have a shelf dedicated to it, and they're, like, covering my walls in my house, but we are talking about Friendo today, which is Alex Pachnedel's a book about materialism, friendship, the destruction of and decline of Western civilization, corporate marketing. There's a lot of stuff going on in this book, and I have a lot of things to say about Rex Carrington and Zajac. But I love this book, and I'm the one that picked it. I've been a fan for a while, so I'm going to let some of you guys talk about it first. What are your guys' first thoughts? Whoever wants to join from the top, go ahead and jump in.
Well, I will say, before we hit the record button today, we were all talking about how it hits you different the second, third, fourth, fifth, however many times you read this thing. It hits you different a few times every time you read it. It's very heavy. It's very funny. It's very sad. It has a lot of very interesting tones and critiques, as Michael said, about Western culture, about how easily distracted we are and how we like to stay like that. We like to stay easily distracted. Please keep listening to our podcast. Download every episode. Listen to us when you have free time. Thank you so much. It's a great book, and I'm really glad we it's good stuff. Alex Pachnedel is awesome. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of that comic. Michael and I are big fans. Michael, I'm going to say it wrong. Say it. The robot word.
Giga.
Giga.
The robot word.
It's a right. That's how Doc Brown says it.
That's what I thought too. Or Giga Gaga Giga something. But it's a really great comic, and Alex Pachnedel is a really great writer. He's a really great dude. He's very kind to his fans. He's really cool. Like online, he's got a he'll talk to you about his books and stuff, and he's writing some really great things. And this is one of them. And you should check it out.
Yeah, I was just saying to myself a minute ago, like, wow, I'm still digesting my first read. I almost wish I read it twice before we started, because there's just so much to digest. It's like a roller coaster ride through this world that looks like ours on the surface, but it's nothing like ours and plays by completely different rules.
It's definitely a satire on our world, kind of about how celebrities are treated, but now they're in the future, and like, TMZ now has drones, and if you're not a popular enough actor, even though they're stalking you and watching you at your penthouse, they won't record you because you're not important enough.
And those popular things too are like gruesome, horrific accidents.
TMZ really has drones, or is that like for real? That's
no, that's in the book. Probably. That's the drone.
Oh, okay, in the book. Okay,
when he's sleep, when he's.
They probably.
I wouldn't put it past them, though. Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah, I thought it was more of a satire on like our engagement with the world, rather than the world that we live in. Right, like the whole big part of this book is there's this law passed where everything is marketing, and like everything like our just being out in the world could be part of some sort of company's marketing for something. So like, you might just be shopping, and then somebody will come in, pull your pants down, and like point at your underwear and tell you you need new ones or whatever. And like, you can't be mad. You can't sue them. They can't get in trouble because they'd just be like, "Me undies, pick them up."
Well, I think you need the backing of one of the big companies for that to land. But yeah, totally.
So our main characters, Leopold Juif, or Leo Juif when he is older and a failing actor, but as we're introduced to him, he's raised by a very strict Southern like Baptist father, and all that he wants is an Action Joe figure, which Action Joe is a recurring element. And then this not being able to buy the figure causes abuse in front of a CPS agent, and then Leo is sent into foster care, and then we don't see him again until he's an alcoholic, drug-addicted actor. And our first scene is him getting into another car crash. And
actor might be too strong a word.
Yeah. Wannabe actor that in his first scene is crashing drunk and killing the woman he's with in the car, which he has absolutely no empathy for whatsoever, as he stumbles out and then advertises the new Fast and the Furious in this world. This,
Swift,
well, I can look it up.
Swift.
It's the Swift and
Swifty. Getting Swifty. Oh wait, that's a different.
The Swift and the Sirius 12. So Swift and Sirius. It's called Swift and Sirius.
Yeah.
And
might as well be though.
Advertising to he's constant cameras.
More a dancer, I think, this than movie. An actor. This that scene, the lack of empathy, reminded me so much of that scene in Boogie Nights when that girl's ODing on coke, and the guy's like, "This is the third time this week," and they're like, "We'll get a different dealer. Get him fuck out of here or whatever." And it was the same, like, "Come on, man, get your head on straight. Say your line so that we could get out of here." It's like, fuck. This lady just died and you smashed up this nice-ass car? For what?
So in this marketing-run world, he is sleeping with a producer of films named Rachel, who gets him a gift, which is called a friendo, because Leo really doesn't have too many real connections, which I think a big part of what Pacnadel is trying to get out in this book with the messages about how much people are on social media and don't have real connections or real friends and have digital connections with people that they rely on. But with these four bizarre questions, Jerry, which becomes the name of his friendo, is able to basically form. And I love that scene where he forms from these four questions. And definitely the last one about God.
That he doesn't even answer. Like, one of his answers to the questions is, "What the fuck? Oh, thank you, and we're done."
And that's what forms Jerry. I mean, the question is, your father builds you a whole universe to play with, but it doesn't have air conditioning. Someone at school offers to trade it for a day without judgment. Do you make the trade? What the fuck? And that's what fully forms Jerry as his friendo. And Jerry is set up as he wants you to buy things and spend money, or he won't spend time with you. And that is the initial setup. I'm going to let Chaz go into this next part, because the way that he makes money, because he doesn't have really any money, he's living off this producer girlfriend, is who leaves him an allowance, basically. He dances at...
She's such a good woman. Like, the best woman. I left your money awful. On the couch, babe. Like,
there's $50 in the key
jar. What can I do for you? I'm gonna go to work. You haven't changed your clothes in a week. It's fine though. I love you. Bye. Like, come on.
But
lucky bastard.
He dances at a male night. I assume a gay nightclub, and everyone is dressed up as sexualized versions of the Wizard of Oz characters. He is the Tin Man. And his only other three friends, besides Jerry, are the other characters, the Lion, the Scarecrow, and I believe the other one is Toto.
Dorothy, I don't think.
Or no, there is no Dorothy.
Yeah, Dorothy wasn't there.
And one thing this captures from someone that worked in the production scene and lived in L.A. off and on, and this book captures how people are in L.A., perfectly. Like, all they do is talk about... Oh, yeah, it's terrible. All they do is talk about Burning Man. They're all trying to do gigs constantly and meet people and try to get themselves become famous. They're all about materialism. They don't really are, they're not really seeking...
Superficial as fuck.
Yeah, they're not really seeking real friends. They're just seeking connections to build their own careers. And most of them aren't even talented. They're just basically lazy and trying to get rich by basically drinking and partying until they meet the right people. And it's a perfect encapsulation, I think, of it. Pachnidale did a really good job of showing what Los Angeles is really like and even this parody of our own world. And it seems to be in the future the Santa Ana winds are causing more dust storms, which causes a disaster where he acts like his friends abandon him, but in fact Jerry leads him away from his friends to go get matcha because he has to buy something for Jerry to be connected with him. And this causes basically him getting confused and thinking this old crazy bum is his father. And then he gets stabbed and electrocuted. And since Jerry is connected to his cerebral cortex, it then malfunctions on Jerry, and Jerry no longer needs him to buy things to interact with him, where kind of the insanity of the book takes off. And that's...
Holy shit! Oh, I'm so stupid! I didn't put that two and two together. I just always thought he was just like an evil fucking program, and that's just how... I didn't even think about like the damage to the human body equating to the software.
Because he was connected, the software was connected to a cerebral cortex, and he got electrocuted.
God, I'm a lazy reader. Henry, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry!
But that kind of causes the catalyst of Jerry just, you know, the worst desires of Leo and all of his undealt with childhood, you know, issues with his father and with materialism to the full extent, which leads to him becoming a star eventually because he starts robbing Cornucopias basically Cornucopia is a retail store. And he decides to go at gunpoint at Jerry's advice to try to steal an Action Joe figure, even though they no longer exist, which we'll get into for in a second. But that road trip is extremely fucked up. And it's just crazy that in the world they live in, after he commits a crime, which somehow he doesn't get shot because Jerry takes the bullet, but Jerry is just a hologram.
They do reveal,
I think they said that it was a misfire.
A misshot, misfire.
Also loved, we can't glaze over, in the process of him robbing the Cornucopia, the Walmart of the future, interactivity or whatever, that cop, the mall cop, the rent-a-cop, coming out, you know why none of us have gotten rolled over? Because of me, motherfucker. And then,
my gun doesn't work.
Perfect occurrence of events, like the way that it's all played out, is so great. And I also, because he's there to steal that figure, I needed to point out how funny it was when he finds out that they don't have the figure anymore, that they stopped making them, and he's like, "Come on, man! I brought a gun and everything." Like, just such a casualness to
it's
the
like
robbery.
You're making me look like a fool.
Yeah, like now I look stupid here, but.
I mean, the equivalent of that is us running into, like, I was about to say running into a Toys R Us, but those are all closed now, right?
Officially, yeah. I think the last two finally, like, I just crossed myself and my wallet.
So that would be us running into a Target with a gun being like, I want an original squishy head Michelangelo from 1988.
You give me, like, that bad guy from Stretch Armstrong whose name I forgot, but he's red and
I know you got him in the back.
Vacuum
he's
sealer,
in the back somewhere.
And then you pull him apart.
And the truth of Action Joe is he was recalled because he had several terrible chemicals in his paint that caused, I believe, diabetes, several different pre-diabetes, several different diseases. And so they were all dumped in a landfill, which is based on a real story, but with the E.T. video game that came out in the 80s, where they actually did this in the high desert in Oregon. Atari took all copies of the E.T. game and dumped them in a landfill in the high desert in Oregon and buried them, which is what they've done with the Action Joe figures that he's so obsessed with getting because... You know, it's kind of the catalyst of who he becomes as a person. And I gotta say, I love when we get more into the corporate heads of the world, the people that run the Friendo Tech, who have to have constant blood transfusions every day because of how fucked up they're constantly getting. And also the owner of Cornutopia, who is definitely based off of the owners of Walmart, Rex Carrington, who hunts people for sport with his child that audit him, which is one of the most bizarre and my favorite scenes in the book.
10,000 awesome. Acres of his own property, his own currency,
his own 10,000
acres in America.
Yeah, he said it's no longer America.
Yeah, that's insane. But it's actually not that insane.
No, the Waltons own land like that. The Waltons who own Walmart, they definitely have land like that.
It's all that Green Acre money that the Waltons got. That's what
and they would make it their own country if they could.
If I learned anything in the last 2 years, it's that if you have money in America, you're fine.
So there's five five members of the Walton family, and they make each of them separately make $1 million a minute every day.
That's sickening.
The
name of the company that makes the Friendo glasses is called The Manufacturer, I think, throughout the entire thing. And I couldn't tell if that was the real company name or if it was just that nobody really cared what they were actually called, and we could substitute whatever we wanted. Because when Google Glass was, like, getting hyped, or Microsoft HoloLens, I remember thinking, like, that looks nerdy as fuck, but, like, cool as shit at the same exact time. Like, do I want glasses that real-time translate shit for me in real life that I can, like, look up stuff? And then I thought, no, I can't be. You gotta unplug every once in a while, you know? But did y'all have the same reaction when they started pitching Google Glass and all that shit, the AR of real life?
I lived in Palo Alto at the time, and I worked at a coffee shop, and so many old men that worked in the tech companies came in with Google glasses, and they just looked ridiculous.
Yeah, because they never streamlined it and made it look cool. But if
they would never pay attention to you. So, like, I would be watching whatever was on the Google Glass and then screaming about their latte, and I was just wondering if they were watching porn. Like while they're walking in public.
Yeah, give me the cream. No, I'm just talking to you, barista. I want the cream in my coffee.
So I'm one of those people that, like, if they told you tomorrow that, like, we could inject a processor into your skull and it would, like, be your phone and your computer, I'd be like, fuck it, yeah, let's do it.
Well, fucking like, Elon's trying to do that to us. Can you imagine getting, like, a virus in your brain, like a computer virus in your brain?
All right, well, Jack got dark with it. I just want to be able to think, like
hack your brain,
hey,
bro.
Google, how do I do this for a second? Yeah, I don't want to say it. Like, I don't want to be, like, let people know that I'm having to ask Google something because I don't know the answer.
Just imagine.
I just want to think about it.
Somebody says a word you don't know, and you're like, let me just think about what that means, then you know it. Like,
I was just thinking about how inescapable advertisements would be and fucking annoying. Yeah. Your like brain would just get
that's sort of the
advertisements.
I feel like
the
moral of this
story
is
you could do to
is
stop
that,
it.
Like, no technology comes without a cost. And the cost of this one is business.
Pagnadelli's, I love how he merges cyberpunk kind of ideals with so much political undertones. He kind of has done it in all of his books, and that heavily in Red Fork. Like I said, this in Red Fork remind me a lot of each other, where Red Fork capitalism is, like, literally a monster itself and its effect on the poor, where this is more on marketing and capitalism's effect on human nature and making them basically shitty people. Starting with just a toy, the marketing of an action figure at a young age, which has completely warped Leopold's mind. And it's such in his subconscious that Jerry, which is a reflection of his subconscious, like Joe has said, is also obsessed with getting these Action Joe chemical-filled figures, which causes the road trip, where this is where everything kind of collides. They go on a road trip to go to High Desert, Oregon, to get the Action Joe figures, while Rex Carrington, because what's happened is the basically the manufacturer, their network has made a hit show out of Leo and Jerry robbing Cornutopias for hopefully an Action Joe figure until he eventually gets replaced by a sexier, because clearly when he starts getting more money, he gets basically obese and he's always drunk and
gross.
Looks gross.
Got a tight figure though.
He has like teeth missing.
Destroyed his rich, nice girlfriend's house. And is basically
just my favorite part.
When she walks in on him,
she doesn't even get mad at him. She's like, "What were you doing today, babe?" And he was like, "Well, remember when you gave me that $200 and I lost it? And I just cut up this couch, and also like there's like a gaming console on the floor. There's like all this expensive shit everywhere." And then he's like, "Oh, it's cool. I can return it." Like, that woman is a saint.
I like that.
Rachel deserved a bigger part, I think.
You know who needed a bigger part too? The lawyer.
Who?
Low Point Associates. Ooh, ooh. The manufacturer is reaching out to you. You're off scot-free because of us. Their attorney.
Those scenes for with the lawyer are great. Where they're basically explaining that he's now a star.
Yeah.
They're giving him...
Give him those two drones to record everything and tell him just cut loose. Do your thing.
But it causes a war because Walmart of the future, Cornutopia, the manufacturer CEO who gets his blood transfusions because of all the drugs he's been doing, had Cornutopia, Rex Carrington, hires someone to transfuse him with rat poison, killing them both to take him out.
He also hires a super cool assassin.
Zatchek. Yeah, sorry. We got to all talk about Zatchek and the bunny ears. And that is probably the coolest zoophile. He is a zoophile.
He's got a fursona, if anything. He has a little hair, which is actually what the name translates to. I'm thinking of Googling that we were talking about earlier, if we injected a chip into our brain and could do that. I Googled almost every name in this book for significance because it felt like there was a purpose to the oddness of the names. The two drones are named after watchers from the Bible.
Azrael and Samael.
Yeah,
man.
Grigori.
The two representatives for the High Desert are named after Dan Waters and Casper Wingard.
Which was pretty great. A nice little in thing there. And then, the assassin's name translates to the little hare. And I was like, this dude's not little. And then I saw the bunny ears and was like, all right, this works. I like this.
And that's from Artem Trankov, his previous collaborator from Turncoat, if you see the beginning. It was a special thanks to him for translating all these Russian names for this book, which was his follow-up to Turncoat, which we'll talk about that definitely someday soon in the future. I love that book. But it was cool that Arden got to get him all these Russian translations. And I love all the quotes from many people throughout the book about the decline of Western civilization. I think it starts out with the T.S. Eliot one, "The desert is in the heart of your brother." And so much of this book is also just about the desert. Just kind of a desert, as many people will say, even though me and Chaz live in the desert, is a place where you go to die. It's as vast, and you know, without our current social, you know, dynamics and, you know, evolution, we would all be dead here if
you pull the Mr. Morrison and you go out there to hallucinate and find yourself, which is funny because that's kind of a rebirth in a sense. So depending on how you look at the desert, it's either you go there to die or you go there to find yourself and be born again.
Psychedelics in the desert and in the forest, and I gotta say, the forest, the Sierra Mountains are much better. It was a much better awakening experience for me than the desert. Much better.
I like the recurring theme of rebirth.
I live in Missouri,
though.
I eat drugs, I just eat them in suburbia.
Me too. The recurring theme of Leo being complete.
I don't have cool places to go. We can go to the playground down the street or maybe go downtown. There's a lot of cops there.
Kind of spot.
When he tries to commit suicide in the bathroom, and he has this sign that says, "I'm sad," or "I'm not kinky, I'm sad."
And wearing the ruby red slippers too.
Yes, like, yes, and he can't even kill himself right. Okay, so I was doing some Christ has like the major miracles. He brings someone back from the dead. He feeds the crowd of thousands with fish and bread. He heals a paralyzed man. He calms the storm and walks on water.
He knows how to party.
His major feat
with the water to wine. Let's not forget that.
The water to wine. And then his major deal is the resurrection, like coming back from the dead. And in this, in this comic, the lawyer, when he finds him trying to hang himself in the bathroom, you know, he mentions that like, you need to act more messianic, and lonely men 30 years or younger are your apostles. And so they kind of like say it like, you're this weird digital messiah. But he also like keeps making these miracles, like he can't die, like these things keep happening and he doesn't die. Even in the end, he's thrown in the fire, just like Christ, like when Christ died, he like went to heaven and then went to hell and then came back.
Man, not enough people talk about that harrowing of hell, and I feel like that sounds like the coolest part of that whole story. Forever it was, he died, he was in a cave for 3 days, then they came back and were like, hey, maybe we should like put another robe on him, because what if he gets cold and he was gone? You know, like, holy shit. But he went to hell, and
he got bored and went to hell and told the devil, like, fuck you, and then he left.
He was like,
that's all he did. He like gave him the finger and bounced.
Everybody here whatever. That was born before me, I'm giving them a pass too. I'm down here to whoop ass and take names and bring these people up to heaven. Like, fuck yeah. Get in there, Christ.
But yeah, I mean, that's Leo kind of went on this same journey of avoiding death and these little circumstances that kept, you know, happening. Even and the fact that his father was a preacher and his father kept him from buying this toy that would have poisoned him for the rest of his life. Like even that instance of like, oh, there's this Godhead thing like interfering. So it's just very interesting this. And he's so like flawed and bad and not good. And also just the consumerism aspect and stuff, but to like equate that with Christ, and also how like Christ is also a business, and so is religion and church.
Yeah,
there's like so many heavy things here, but it was really cool.
I was gonna say Christ went in and he flipped all the money turners, right, or the change makers, or the whatever. He went in and he flipped all the money, right? He was like, not in my church. And I feel like him robbing all these cornutopias are like, not in our new church. You're not gonna take advantage of these people by automating and like taking jobs away from them. He's there to like get that anger out that middle America's feeling as they're being squeezed out of work after the promise of all these jobs from this big company. So, but I thought, yeah, there's a lot of interesting, now that you're pointing that out, there's a lot of good parallels.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
man.
His baptism in his mind, right? Like where he's struggling.
Yeah, the water.
Rebirth. Yeah, when he's electrocuted in the coma. I think.
And then he's again baptized by fire at the end.
Which is almost like that harrowing of hell. He emerges cleaner, straighter in his mind than ever before.
Where he thinks he's actually
much goopier.
Yeah.
Where he looks like a sludge monster, but he thinks he looks like Action Joe.
I love
that.
Yeah, that page that looked like the action figure like description or commercial, where he emerges as Action Joe and it's like 15 points of articulation. Also has like societal anomie, like his dissolution with all this other stuff, and I was like, "Damn, I want this toy real bad."
Yeah, that Vault should have put that out. Like, I know Vault made the Heathen statue that's really pretty, and you can buy it, and it's like $200. They really should have made a Friendo action figure.
I think without how much they're rolling with the white noise guys now, and how much they're advertising them, and they're seeing their numbers they're getting.
Well, if you're listening, you got at least 3, maybe 4 purchases right here alone.
Yeah. Guaranteed 4 or 5. I do have a question for you guys, and I don't have an answer for this. I actually wanted to get your guys' impact on this, since I know we got to wrap up quickly. Why does Jerry, we never get new glasses, right? There's always the one shattered lens, even after all the marketing and the lawyers have saved him, and he's making all this money, and he's got this huge following. No one ever gives him a new pair of glasses, and Jerry never visually heals himself. I don't, man, I have, like, stressed over this.
I feel like that's a degradation of her, of Leopold's, Leo's own soul. Like, he's...
Yeah, giving up the ghost of consumerism. Letting it rot. Oh, yeah. They ask if they want to recall it. They're like, should we recall it? And they're like, no, let's see how it plays out. We can't get sued for this anyways.
Well, remember, like, the glasses, like, fucking killed that dude in the beginning. Like, hacked the self-driving car.
Yeah, that...
Oh, shit.
Killed
yeah.
that dude just well, for no, being
that,
a dick.
That was like, he was like, that was the great part where Leo was blaming his friend for abandoning him, when in reality he abandoned his friends because Jerry was trying to go get them to get matcha because he needed him to spend money. And when he confronted him, he then had him killed by a self-driving car.
Because his ethical drives were deleted or damaged due to the electricity. So you could see it as his own impulses, or even right? Jerry's just a good friend now. No, you don't got the rules.
And or even did Leo die in the car crash in the very beginning? Because there's also that scene where they're driving by where he's completely, there's that dude completely on fire, and it's the same car that Leo was driving, and he's literally burning to death and saying, Swift and Serious, 12 coming out now.
Yeah. See, I thought that was
just
more,
right past that.
That was more how, no matter what, the world's going to keep on turning. Like, Leo could die in that accident and would have gotten replaced by somebody else who would also just be like fodder for this machine. They would just be there to be squeezed and used and bled dry, essentially. That's how I
and
saw
they already
it. Instead
replaced
of a, like,
him
oh, shit.
Anyway with a sexier version of him because the action figures look nicer, which he then notices when he sees the action figure and it doesn't look like him. It looks like his... the Leo replacement and his friendo, which looks like a monster, and that whole altercation.
Yeah. I didn't even think that they replaced him. I thought that was just a fan who was like, yeah, you're not doing it good enough. I'll show you how Leo rolls. Or whatever. Cause...
We hate all those people. And like the, the psychotic Catwoman fan that used to harass me when I posted Catwoman reviews that then decided to hit up Ram V and tell him that he wasn't writing Catwoman right, which he then had to make a post about. Whoever you are, I blocked you on Twitter. I doubt you're listening.
We hope you're
listening.
Keep on, stay tuned. We'll mention you again, I'm sure.
Get some fucking help.
Sure,
and
like
I
subscribe.
Know
also, you said
we know
even a
know
bad
a
review is
where,
a review.
We know a place where you can get a help. We can get where you can get help. There's a compound in Northern California.
Like, get
and
that
it's a national school of learning where they can teach you how to be a better person and maybe also learn how to use natural tools. But anyway, my final thoughts on this. I talk about every day. I love All White Noise. They're my four favorite writers. Alex Pagnadel really is my cyberpunk manga geek, social commentary kind of side of myself. And this book, like I was saying earlier, the first time I read it, I was kind of like, huh, I love him, but it wasn't that good. The second time I read it, I was like, wait, this is way better, I thought, than the first time I read it. And then the third time I read it, I was like, this book fucks. Like, it's definitely why all of White Noise books are good and all of those creators is because they're all worth rereads. Every one of their stories you can read over and over again and get more from it, which is great. And just like we were saying about Fearscape and what we'll be saying about many other books. So definitely check out Friendo. Check out all the White Noise books releases from Ram, Dan, Alex, and Ryan. Any other final thoughts from you guys before we do a few small announcements?
Let me just consult with my Jerry real fast so somebody else go. He was trying to make a point to me over here. I'm doing the show, Jerry. I don't want to buy anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a wild book, man. I'm still just processing all of it, but I'm definitely going to read it again. And
I think so, yeah. Too. And Dee's obviously a wonderful colorist. I mean, he does Venom now. He's doing King in Black. He's a good colorist, but I think that with Martin, his angles, he has very unique angles. And when he does his own colors, he expresses them. I mean, Department of Truth, along with the picture of everything else and Homesick Pilots and Giga are my favorite books out right now. They're all fantastic. Every time I read them, I feel like I'm experiencing something that's going to be revolutionary in 10 years.
That's the same artist for every single one of those?
No, just Department of Truth and Friendo is the same artist.
Okay.
No, the picture of everything else is Keyshawn Mohan, who is also a good artist. I am so upset about the picture of everything else, number 2, being pushed back to February 17th, and even more upset about Giga 3 being pushed back to March 3rd. But it's because the numbers... Vault's blown up, and they did not have the print material to do these White Noise books are blowing up because they're all blowing up. So our next episode will be covering Bad Night, a criminal arc, and Pulp, which
so excited.
We'll be pretty excited for. Rubricker, saddle up and get into Pulp and get into Bad Night, which... I can't wait to talk about another character named Jacob and Jacob's very, very bad night, a classic kind of noir tale with the femme fatale with Jacob, who's probably my favorite character of the criminal series because he's got a lot of sides, that guy. And then our next White Noise book will be Deep Roots by Dan Waters, which we will hopefully have Graphic Vandalism Johnny on. He was not well. He got sick, and he's getting better. So hopefully, by the time we record, we know he wants to be on it. And me and him are obsessed with Dan Waters, so definitely want to have him on. And I will say about Deep Roots, if it is anything, it demands that one thing that Deep Roots. I will say before we cover it is it demands for Dan Waters to write Animal Man for DC. I think that would be quite... And Superman. I don't know if you guys read Superman, Wonder Woman, but that's the best Superman that's been written in years. So, can't really announce something yet. I teased an announcement the other day preemptively, but we do have a big announcement coming in March, which we're all really, really excited to announce. And
I'm buying a truck.
Cyber truck.
I'm buying a really big gas hog truck so that my friends can ask me to.
I
help
hear
me
they
move
come
when
in 1500 and 2500.
Oh, I'm really busy that Saturday. Sorry, I'm gonna be taking the truck out to the lake.
Do you guys remember that show that was in the 80s and then they remade it in the aughts called V? There is that weird sci-fi show with all the reptilian people.
You mean the true life documentary about what's really been going on behind
Anyhow, there's a big announcement coming in March. We're over ecstatically excited about it. But thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with Criminal and Pulp. As always, I am Poet Air. You can find me on Twitter as PoetAir33. You can find the show on Twitter at Outside the Panels with a 0. You can find us on iTunes, Amazon Music, Google Play, Spotify, and also a variety of podcast networks. We're on about 30 different ones. When you do listen, please write, review, and subscribe. That really helps our numbers, and it helps us get more advertisements. We'd appreciate it. And then let's get everyone else's.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at BTMorgan85. I'm on Instagram at BTMorgan85. I'm nerding up with these guys every week.
He's the co-hostess with the mostest. Real quick before I have Jack do his intro, Jack has just released a bunch of new music that's incredible. If you're into... really, really good electronic music that slaps, I would download
The Rhythm Man.
I would go onto his SoundCloud. Every song's great, and it shows you how talented our editor is here. He's the most talented out of all of us. Thank you so much for doing all the hard work.
Oh, shucks.
And
you can find me, Jack, at sin_aesthetics with an X. Instagram, sin_aesthetic. And check out my SoundCloud. I just dropped a new track this past weekend. Razor Blades. It's some heavy rhythm bass for you.
That'll be Sin Aesthetic on SoundCloud. And tell your friends. And tell your friends to tell their friends' friends.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Chaz Simons.
And what should people be doing, Chaz?
Turning the page and washing your hands.
Once again, be good to yourself. Be good to others. Be nice to each other out there. We're in a hectic time.
And buy, let's buy, do better buy. This year. Capitalism. If Brendo taught us anything, get out there and buy some stuff because people will like you for it. Did I get the right
retail
message?
Retail therapy from makes you feel good.
Socialism, yes, rising. Anyhow,
retail therapy.
We are outside the panels. Thank you for the support and for listening. And we hope you guys have a great day and have a great new comic book day. A lot of good stuff coming out today.
And our buddy Joe Paquette wanted to say some things. Unfortunately, he couldn't come on the show this week, so we're editing this in post, but he will be on some future episodes. So here's his take on the religious aspects of this book.
On how you're saying religion is a common theme in a lot of his writing. Well, in this book, it's no exception. You notice it on many different occasions in the book. And one of the first times I noticed it, aside from the opening with his father, is later on there's some panels where Leo receives some glasses from his girlfriend as a gift. And the box, the packaging that these glasses come in, has a logo or logos of crosses on it. And this logo is the logo of the company that produces these glasses, which is called the manufacturer. And later on in another chapter, you see the headquarters of this company. And on the facade of the building is that same logo, a giant cross designed into the facade of the building. And I believe that this is probably some kind of social commentary on how technology and social media has become this form of worship for people, how we are addicted to it. We need it. We go crazy if we go without it, especially younger generations are so dependent on it. They worship it. And later on, we're introduced to another character, the owner, the billionaire who runs this company, the manufacturer, whose name is Rex Carrington. And this guy is quite a character. I mean, he's bigger than life. He stands above everyone and judges people. There's even an instance where someone does him wrong, so he goes, kidnaps him, and hunts him to pass judgment like he's a god. He decides what is right and what is wrong, and no one can tell him otherwise. So, like, he's like the god. His company is like the church that is there to help people worship that god. It's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. Another instance is where you see a theme of religion is where Leo has a fever dream. And in this fever dream, he's dreaming that he's getting baptized in a body of water. And baptism is a very strong theme of religion. It's obvious. That one's pretty straightforward. And another instance of the cross being represented in the book is after Leo gets attacked and electrocuted and he breaks his glasses, he gets a crack on one of the lenses and the cracks form the same cross logo of the manufacturer. So you get another symbol that ties technology to religion and worship, which is pretty interesting. It's there. It isn't overly subtle. I mean, anyone who pays a little bit of attention can see these little tidbits, these crosses thrown in there. So I really thought that was pretty interesting. And it's sprinkled throughout the book all over the place.
Anyway, that's this week's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed. We'll see you next week. And as Chaz always says, wash your hands.